Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 298 for Tuesday, November 16th, 2010. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where usually you write the agenda. You ask us questions. You provide tips. We share our answers. We share our own tips. But today, we're actually, you're writing some anyway. Of the agenda. That's right. But it's a cool stuff found show today, folks. The hopper got too full. We didn't do one in October. So today is the day. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I am Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun. And then back up to you, Dave.
I know, right next to me again. It's almost like it's becoming a habit, is
Pilot Pete. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Absolutely, man. Yeah. Absolutely.
It's starting to be a habit again, you're right.
I know, it's a good thing.
I gotta say, though, I don't like these cool stuff found shows.
You don't, huh?
Yeah, they're very expensive.
You are not the only listener to tell us that. All right, let's dive right in. We've got some sponsors to talk about, too. Of course, we have... I think Pete says he's got a stump the geek question, which I believe hits a little close to home for him. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but let's dive right in with one that you did send in from Kevin.
Hey, Mac Geeks, it's Kevin here, Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I'm just recording this on my new iPhone 4 in the Voice Memo app.
So all right.
Hopefully it sounds good.
Sounds great.
Just a quick tip on your last show. You guys were talking about RAM and how to determine what kind of RAM, how much to get for whatever machine and what specs you need, that sort of thing. Mac Tracker is a cool app. It's on the iPhone and I believe on the iPad as well. It's called Mac Tracker, and it will tell you the specs for any machine going back, 10 years at least. So it's a really cool app. It also works on OS X. I'm not sure if it works in Snow Leopard. I was looking on their site and I didn't see support for Snow Leopard. But anyways, check it out. It's really cool and I use it all the time to determine what RAM to put in Macs. Love the show. Thanks a lot. Okay, bye.
Awesome. Thanks, Kevin. Yeah, that's MacTracker.ca. And I believe it does run on Snow Leopard. I know I've run it.
Absolutely.
Run it recently. Okay.
I decided to take the hit for the team. And here's the other good thing about that piece of software, Dave.
What's that, John?
So I tried it on my portable. Is that it shows the sometimes hard to determine actual and the Apple recommended value. So I looked up the machine that you and I have, which as everybody should know, although Apple says it can take 4, it can actually take 6. So these guys actually listed. They say actual 6, Apple 4 gigabytes of RAM. Okay. So I'm convinced that that's an accurate tool for telling you reality.
Cool. Well, that's great. Yeah. I love that tool. I was going to say, I think they have a dashboard board widget, but I don't think they do. I'm confusing that with something else. But yeah, that's one of those tools again. And of course, that's sort of the basis for these shows is that we rely on it so much that we forget that it's as useful as it is. And we certainly forget to recommend it. But yeah, Mac Tracker is awesome. All right. Moving on to listener David wrote in and said, if you option click in any window in an app, all the windows in the last active app will hide. And then when you reactivate that app, it will reappear. I discovered this by accident. Also, if you option click one of the 3 buttons in the upper left corner of a Finder window, all the Finder windows will do the same. Well, that's pretty cool.
Have you tried this? Well, I tried it and I had mixed results. What I was able to get to work, Dave.
Yep.
Was if I held down option and clicked on a visible portion of the desktop.
Okay.
I found that would minimize, but I didn't find. So I was a bit unclear exactly where you should be clicking in order to get this to happen. And it didn't happen if I clicked in a window or.
Got it. So let's say, and I just tried this here. So I've got Yojimbo open and I've got multiple windows open in that app, right? If I then option click in a window for another app, for example, Safari, as soon as I do that, all the Yojimbo windows have now hidden.
Okay. I think that's the part part that was missing. Okay.
Right.
Because I just tried that and the same sort of thing happened. So it not clicking in the active window, but clicking in either the desktop or window of a background app.
Correct. In another app. That's right. Yes.
Got it.
Yep. And if you option click one of the three buttons in the upper left corner of a Finder window, all of the Finder windows will do the same. Oh, I see what he's saying. So if I hit the little yellow thing, that minimizes one Finder window. If I option click the little yellow thing, it minimizes all Finder windows. Oh, that's very interesting.
I bet it works for all the apps too. Like Safari, if you have several Safari windows open.
Yeah. I bet you're right. Yeah. And the option click, what it does, of course, is it modifies what's going to happen. But you can sometimes see that, as we've talked about, if in the Finder, for example, you go to the file menu and you just leave it open and then hold down the option or start toggling the option key up and down, you can see quite a few things change with regards to this particular tip. Close window changes into close all, which fits what he was talking about. And again, same with minimize and zoom in the window menu of the Finder. If you option click or hold down option, you'll see those change from minimize and zoom to minimize all and zoom all, which is pretty darn cool. We like that kind of stuff.
It's magic.
It shows that somebody's thinking out there. You thinking about anything, John?
I have a few.
Go, take one.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you a little story. No, I'll tell you what I was doing today. So it's I was cleaning up my office and I found a second generation iPod Shuffle.
Okay.
You remember this little guy, kind of like a Tytac, and
yep.
And it was totally dead. So, you know, I plugged it into the computer and it seemed to detect, because I use Hardware Growler, that something was inserted, and then iTunes started up and it said, oh, there's new software. And then everything started wigging out and the thing totally disappeared. Like, oh, great. So poking around a bit here, there is something that will reset this class of machine. And I'll link to the support article. This is what I had to do to get it to come back to life. So it was in some weird state, or maybe the update got interrupted, but it's called iPod Reset Utility.
Oh,
and it's on the Apple site. And I never knew this existed because I never ran into this problem and I haven't used this particular unit for quite a while. It could be because of the battery was totally dead.
Sure.
And I think it was charging up, and then it tried to deal with it, and then something bad happened. But anyways, there is a utility, because if you recall, the Shuffle really doesn't have too much in the way of user feedback mechanism other than a single LED.
Yeah.
So
it's a nice LED, though, isn't it?
So whereas other, it's green and amber, and, you know, that's really nice. But unlike other iPods that show you, and there's a special icon that they'll show when the battery is totally dead or near dead. I think it actually has, you know, red, and then it shows like a lightning bolt through it. And this means, you know, the battery is so dead, all I can do is tell you the battery is so dead.
Right.
And I'm not going to do anything else for a little while. And I think maybe this thing was in that state, but it wasn't able to tell me. So
cool.
Yeah. I got more, but that was just very topical, because I just did that this morning.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. All right, you know, let's go to our first sponsor, which is AudioEngineUSA.com. Audio Engine, as you might imagine, and if you've been a listener to the show for a while, you already know, they make stuff to do with sound. Typically, they started with speakers. They've made a couple other cool things, too. But I do want to talk about the second set of speakers that they came out with, the Audio Engine 2s. These are desktop speakers, and I have to be honest, these are some of the best desktop speakers I've ever used. They're $199 for the pair. It's two separate speakers, two separate enclosures. Inside the enclosures are two speakers apiece, a low-end speaker, a high-end speaker, and then there's a little slot, which acts as a bass port to give them more low-end. These things, you know, they'll fit on your desktop. They're about 6 inches tall. They come in black or white, and they've been engineered to reproduce sounds from MP3s. So when music is compressed to MP3, it changes it somewhat. And the Audio Engine guys know this. And so what they did was they built their speakers to have an EQ pattern that highlights and compensates for the changes that happen to music when it's converted to MP3. So you get this really rich, true sound out of your music, or out of your speakers. You can plug these into a computer. They've got a mini 8 port, so you can plug them into your iPod. It comes with all the cables you would need to do any of that, including the cables to connect the speakers together to each other, to connect the speakers to your computer, to your iPod, even to like a little stereo unit, a little stereo amplifier, not amplifier, but a you know, a little receiver that's kind of redirecting sound for you. So again, this is all available at audioengineusa.com. It's $199, but there's a coupon code I have for you. It's MGGTEN. So that's MGG10 gets you, as you might guess, 10% off at audioengineusa.com. So go check it out. And they do offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. They call it a 30-day free audition. So you can, if you don't like it, you send it back and you get all your money back. No restocking fees, none of that craziness. So audioengineusa.com. All right, John, let's go on to Connor. Connor wrote in, I'm trying out a new email program based on Mozilla's Thunderbird project called Postbox. It's at postbox-inc.com. Got a lot of really cool features that I'm liking, although it does have a few quirks. So far, I am really impressed. Maybe you can give it a look. Did you take a look at this, John?
No.
No, not at all?
No.
It's, you know,
I'm a mail type of guy, Dave. I can't. You can't ask me to make these drastic changes all the time. I mean, come on.
I agree with you. And it does. It kind of has a, it looks similar to mail, but it's got this three pane thing going on where you pick your folder and then you can have topics and even favorite contacts and stuff listed. So, you know, it's one of these things. The good news is that it is a cross-platform deal. At least I'm pretty darn certain that it's a cross-platform deal. Need Windows? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, and the reason I say that's a good thing is let's face it. A lot of the development for Mac only email clients has ground to a halt. And that's because of the success of mail. But if you don't like mail, or if you do like something like Postbox better, look for something that's being developed cross-platform. If they've already figured out their development path and they're going cross-platform with it, you've got a good chance of this product continuing to be updated and supported. Whereas I think the market for a Mac only third-party email client is shot. But yeah, this one's interesting. It's got some features like a quick reply kind of thing where when you're reading a message, you can hit a little button and it automatically builds a reply and you just type it right there. Obviously you can quick reply all, but it's an interesting little interface. It's clean. I like it. You should check it out. Yeah. Pete's asking me how much it is.
I know how much it is, Dave. It is, for a single copy, $39.95, and they have a Postbox 2 family pack that will allow up to 5 people, and that's $59.95.
Cool.
See, I read your mind.
Thanks. Actually, you read Pete's mind. I would have totally forgotten about it, but Pete's right. See, Pete's the one that, like many of you, Pete's the one that goes out and buys all the stuff we talk about here.
Yeah. Well, lucky for Pete, they have a 30-day trial on this, and it even says on the main page, so, you know, it's smart enough to detect your browser, and it says, oh, if you need Windows, you know, there's a small link, so...
Right. Right.
In fact, yeah, if you haven't found the right client yet, which I have, Dave. Finally. Yeah,
that's excellent, John. I'm so happy for you.
Well, except for one thing, which, well, I'll toss that in as a quick tip. I talked about this before. I did a gadget on it. We talked about it a little bit, but the signature profiler plugin.
Oh,
remember,
yeah.
that was my only fish shake, or not a fish shake, but a finger wag at Mail App, is that its signature support kind of stinks and that it's really non-existent, or it's not too smart. Let's put it that way. Yeah. It'll let you do signatures, but for the way I'm configured, where I have multiple addresses tied to another address, it can't deal with that situation.
I can't hack it
very well. No. So that's something I'll link to as well. And, you know, the guy's been updating it. And, well, once it's in place, I mean, I don't even know it's there. It just does what I would have expected Mail App to do, which is, you know, provide the signature keyed on who the person's sending to.
Yep.
Right? Okay.
Right. Right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that signature profiler is cool. You mentioned that. I guess. I think it was a previous Cool Stuff Found show when you first introduced that. But it's good stuff. All right. Moving on to a comment from Jeff.
Hey, John and Dave, it's Jeff from Denver, Colorado. I was just listening to episode 289, and John was talking about using Safari to download a YouTube video. I actually found an extension. If you have Safari 5, you can install an extension it puts a button beneath the YouTube video where the like and all that is. And if you click on that button, it gives you options to download the video in both Flash or MP4 in the different resolutions available. I will send you an email that has a link that you can put on the show notes. This is where you cut me off.
All right, we'll try to cut you off. Oh, yeah. See, I got to push the buttons. Yeah. So it's cool. Have you used that one, John? I know you were using quite a few of these.
Well, I looked at there. So the one that he's recommending, yeah, it's fastesttube.
Correct.
.quizzu, K-W-I-Z-Z unit.com.
What are we, Canadian now?
Well, I'm trying to slip into my phonetic alphabet there.
All right.
Or saying Zed. Well, that's everybody in the world says that except
Zulu
us.
Zulu in the NATO phonetic alphabet?
Oh, yeah. Probably, but you know what I mean when I say Zed.
I did.
Yeah, I think we're the only people that say Z. Everybody else in the world says Zed. Anyways, there's another one I found, and I think it's almost identical. It's another extension. It's called YouTube Video Downloader for Safari, and it does a similar thing. Is that all of a sudden you'll see this button, and you know it's funny because once it's there, you kind of expect it to be there. But yeah, you just get a download button, and it will typically, as he said, that this one does the same thing. It gives you a choice of FLV or MP4 to save it. Because I guess it really is an MP4 in there. It's just covered with an FLV wrapper.
Is it always that way? I guess it is. Yeah.
Sometimes.
Yeah. All right.
I think that's always the case. I think FLV can support MP4, but I think you can put other things within an FLV file using another type of encoder. But yeah, having that option is, so we'll link to both of those. They look pretty identical in what they do.
Yeah, I found it to be nice because I was using, I was doing some stuff for work and was trying to basically create a little podcast feed for guys to be able to see some of the videos that were being put out. And of course, it wasn't YouTube. It was on a private server and there was no option to download, like at least sometimes there is in YouTube. And so that helped perfectly. I was able to pull it down, convert it to the proper format for the iPhone and set it up. So it's very useful.
Cool. Very cool. We got an email from Greg with more Safari extensions. One of them is the one you just mentioned on YouTube Downloader. One is Save Tabs, which does just what you might think, where it saves your Safari tabs. Another is No More iTunes, a very handy little idea. A lot of times when you click on an iTunes link, it brings you to the page in Safari to show you the iTunes page, and then it launches iTunes in the background, which you may or may not want to have happen. And this No More iTunes Safari extension is for those of you in the latter camp. So that's another good one. And then he's got two Facebook extensions that he recommends. One is Facebook Photo Zoom, which is a handy little thing. And then also Facebook Ads Blocker, which, of course, I can't get behind. But you know, we share all things here. So off you go. Got anything on any of those, John? Have you used any of those?
Just the down. I think he's talking about the same one. There seems to be quite a few of something similar.
He is. He's talking about that same one. All right. No. And then I think it was another Greg that sent in a comment about a little app called Grabbox, which is at Grabbox double B together, like they're supposed to be, whatever that means. Grabbox.devsoft.no. What Grabbox does is it's for those of you that have Dropbox accounts, which are available for free. In fact, we'll even put a link in the show notes that'll get you an extra 250 megs and also sends us an extra 250 megs for the Dropbox. But you get 2 gigs, so 250 free. What Grabbox does is it reacts to, as per their description, reacts to screenshots that you take. It automatically copies the screenshot once you take it to your Dropbox public folder and then puts the URL for that screenshot in your clipboard. So you can take a screenshot and then the next step you make is you paste that into an email. You paste it. You could paste it into your Twitter feed, you know, whatever you want to do. And boom, you've got an instantly publicly shareable screenshot without having to do any uploading or any, you know, craziness. So the thing I can't understand is why I have known about this one for like 3 weeks since he sent it in and I haven't installed it yet, because it sounds frankly perfect and saves a lot of hassle and headache. So that's a good one. I like that. Have you tried this one, John?
I read up on it. Yeah, I got the same out of it that you did.
Okay.
Yeah, it's something that, wow, that's useful.
I know. The more I think about it, the more I think, what's my problem here?
This would be good for a very quick support incident, rather than firing up firing up a utility. I mean, a snapshot could get the point across as far as try to tell me what you're seeing. No, let's just do this. So I guess the only thing is you got to make sure that the person, I got to get my parents set up with Dropbox. That's right.
Oh yeah. And then share a folder between them like you and I do. Speaking of Dropbox, Dave sent in a little audio comment about Dropbox.
Hey guys, it's Dave. Just wanted to give you guys a heads up or a tip for Dropbox. I know everybody uses it and loves it. They recently expanded their referral thing to allow you to earn up to 10 extra gigs free. But I also just learned about something last week that I hadn't heard of anywhere. They have some type of education program discount. So basically, if you go to dropbox.com/edu, if you can basically link your account to an email address with a .edu extension, they'll double your space for your referrals. So normally when you do a referral, you gain an extra 500 megs. If you have it linked to an EDU, you gain an extra, 250. If you link to an EDU, you gain 500. And they actually do it recursively in that it's not only for future referrals, but it's also referrals that you've done. So I linked mine, and now I got 20 plus gigs free, and I still haven't even used all my referrals. So it's pretty cool. Just figured I'd throw that out there because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are college students that listen, or professors or whatever. Or even if you happen to know a non-geek that is in college that would let you link your address, you can get a lot more free space. All right. This is where you cut me off.
You know, thanks, Dave. On to that latter point, if there's any of you out there, see, now, of course, by listening to the show, you don't fall into the category of non-geek, so you're probably going to want to use your address for yourself. But if you don't, John and I certainly wouldn't be against testing this feature out for you.
Let me add in there, if you're a student, high school or college, and you're not saving your papers to a Dropbox folder on your computer, then you're insane. I helped my niece write her, get her thesis back off her hard drive, then turn around to Dropbox way too late. But
yeah,
I mean, because that's the beauty. Even if you delete your thesis, you got 30 days to go get it back.
Yep.
It's right there. So, yep. I mean, it's free backup.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it is. I got to my desk this morning and my MacBook Pro was off. Now, I haven't really been at my desk much. I actually was here a little bit yesterday. There were some complications following my wife's surgery. So we were actually back in the hospital a little bit just prior to the weekend. And she is doing fine now and back on the road of progress here. But so I get to my desk, my first day of being able to, sit down and actually do some stuff in the morning, and my computer's off. Well, that's kind of weird. I expected it would have gone to sleep, but off. Huh? So I try to wake it up and I finally, hold down the power button enough. I finally get it to come up and I realize it's booting from my backup drive, my clone drive. And at that point once it booted up, I realized it says, we can't, should I initialize this disk that you've inserted because I can't recognize it. And I thought, maybe not quite yet because I think that's my other hard drive, but let's take a look. And it had been since the 10th was the last time the clone ran because my computer's essentially been asleep at clone time since then. Now a time machine has been backing up, but restoring from a time machine backup is a whole lot more time intensive than simply booting from my clone drive. And as I said, I hadn't been at my desk, there was stuff I needed to do. I couldn't just jack around with my computer all morning. So I booted up from it, but realized, okay, I'm 5 days old on this. But the reality was, with Dropbox, having all my documents on my Dropbox folder and all my mail in IMAP, I really didn't miss anything. The only thing that I didn't have on the old drive, or on the clone drive, was that I had updated to 10.6.5 on my laptop and had not done that on the clone drive yet. Now, whether that had something to do with why things corrupted, I don't know. I was able to get it to mount the drive after I used Disk Warrior, which really, I tried every other tool, Drive Genius, Disk Utility, and one other that doesn't come to mind right now, but Disk Warrior was the only one that got it back, but didn't get everything. Something got corrupted. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe there is something going on with my hard drive. You remember, John, this was the drive that had a similar problem when I sent it into Apple. I don't know what happened here. It tests okay. Everything seems fine. But I'm going to format it again. In fact, I intended on doing that while we were recording the show, but it's been such a crazy day. I didn't even have time to start it before we started the recording. But as Pete, to Pete's point, Dropbox made that a completely seamless thing. As soon as I booted up, it synced down from Dropbox, and it was all as though nothing had changed. I mean, I was good to go. Yeah. I can't even remember. I may have updated an app or something in the meantime, but if I did, it'll re-update, you know. That stuff's out there. So
yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It made me think, I'm not sure that the next computer I buy for myself as a main machine will be a laptop. And that'll be the first time since 1998 that I will do that. Mm. But I don't need it. I don't need one machine that I can bring with me everywhere. And that was the reason to move to a laptop, because I can bring a laptop with me, but with all this stuff in the cloud, I don't have to do anything. My data is wherever I am, as opposed to I have to bring it with me on one device. It's now on any device. So I think I'm going to get a screaming iMac or I don't know that a Mac Pro is really warranted for me having in the office, but certainly an iMac is, you know, a lot more horsepower for the buck. So I'll have to, you know, I have to play with it, but that's kind of my thought.
Sure. Yeah, so Dave, speaking,
I'm not speaking.
Well, I was going to speak. Do you have something, Pete?
No, I was going to say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now you got an excuse to get a MacBook Air.
Yeah. Well, see, that's what I'm thinking.
Have the powerhouse at home, MacBook Air on the road.
Yep. That's right.
All right. Sorry to interrupt, John.
So you were talking about 10.6.5, Dave.
Yes.
And I got a sad tale, but I was able to fix the problem. So here's a sad tale. So I upgraded to 10.6.5 because even though I had no reason to, I just wanted to be part of the group of people that you know, dove in and did it.
Okay.
Just, you know, sense of community.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Much to my dismay, when I started mail, it came up and said, incompatible plugin.
Yes.
Disabled. Mail has disabled the following plugin. And in this case, it's something that I like using, and some other people may want to know about it as well, called Growl Mail.
Okay.
You know what Growl is. Growl is a notification system, and the Growl package actually includes an optional, I believe it's an optional install in the Growl installer, that it's a plugin for mail. And when messages come in, it'll show you like a brief preview in a Growl alert, and you can, you know, set the timing, just like all of the Growl things. But unfortunately, even a point upgrade like this from 10.6.4 to 10.6.5 changes something somewhere where all of a sudden mail thinks that the plugin's not compatible. It is, and I'll link to an article. There are two things you could do. You can either do some voodoo on the terminal, which changes some, I think it's UUID or some plugin signature and tells mail, no, it's really okay. Or you can just download a new bundle, which is what I turned out to do in this case. And then the warning went away. So that was the only trauma I ran into with 10.6.5. Other than that, it seems to, you know, I won't say it changed my life, but nothing else is broken.
Right. Right. All right. Let's move on a little bit. I think, John, we've heard your tale of woe from the iPod, and I didn't even realize I was going to share my tale of woe with my hard drive, but I think Pete's got a tale of woe that we're going to hear.
No.
I think Pete's got a couple of them, but you know what? Let's talk about some positive things before we loop back to yet another tale of woe here. And Jeff sent us a link to something. He says, I just found this on Lifehacker, something called Media Rover. He said, from the article, it seems to be the perfect solution for the long talked about iTunes on multiple machines issue. I only use one machine, so I can't really test it out. If it works as it seems, it would be invaluable. Now, this is available at MediaRover.com. I did reach out to them when this came in, and I asked him, I said, you know, is this what I think it is, or what it could be? Where it's one iTunes library shared amongst multiple machines. And no, it is not that. What it does is it syncs your iTunes library amongst all your machines. And they're looking, you know, they have the technology in place to make this, you know, one library everywhere, you know, one library shared amongst everything happen. But there's some questions. And, you know, the first question that came up with was, well, if you link all the files and then someone's PC goes offline, you then can't play that file and you can't add it to your iPhone if you're doing it from your computer. So what happens? You know, what happens if the user then deletes that file? And you know, if they're linking and syncing things like most played and ratings, whose library wins, or does it have to be added together? So they've got some questions about how best to do that, and that they're reviewing there. And if you have any thoughts, send them in. We'll pass them right back to Media Rover. So that was their question back to me. But yeah, this looks pretty cool, and it does. It syncs the libraries everywhere, so you can have everything everywhere. But again, you're making multiple copies of all these songs with this. Pete, you got something? No. Oh, okay. Sorry. No, it's all right. Without you having your computer here, I have to go on body language.
That's right.
John, any anything to add to this one before we move on?
No.
No. All right. Then I guess we move on to Tony. And Tony writes, if you need to help someone with their computer, and helper and helpy both have TeamViewer installed, you can control each other's computers and it's all free. He says it's cross-platform, and there's also an iPhone app for the person doing the helping. I recently used this in China with my MacBook being the helper to my mom in the UK using XP, and later with my business partner in the UK who had a mail problem on her iMac. And I had to get her to hook up my iMac at the office and then import mailboxes from the shared setup. I did this all with TeamViewer. It was a geek triumph, especially as TeamViewer traverses the great firewall of China. Computer sharing, TeamViewer, I was about to give you his URL because his company has something to do with Teams as well. But I don't have the TeamViewer.
I think it's teamviewer.com.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, I just want to be clear because I investigated this a bit. It is free for non-commercial use.
Okay.
So just keep that in mind. I don't think they list pricing for various size enterprises, small to large office. But yep. It sounds like that they don't lock it down or anything. So,
and do you need to install? I know you need to install software on the client computer, but do you need to install software ahead of time on the host computer with this too? That was the one. Yeah, I think you do. You need to download. It looks like in order to join a session, you need to download a disk image and install that. It's not as seamless a thing as Go to Assist, which is one of our sponsors. Actually, it's a sponsor we'll wind up talking about in the show. But of course, this is free, so that, you know, maybe that's worth it. If you can set it up ahead of time, then this is something to check out for sure. And cool that they've got an iPhone app. That's pretty darn cool. I like that.
Yeah, and helping someone with Windows from a Mac machine and vice versa. That's cool.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Absolutely. They've got one for the iPhone and for the iPhone and for the iPad. So that's good. That's good. That's good. All right. We're here. Let's talk about Citrix. Citrix, which is Go to Assist Express. I need to pull up all the right information. Again, you know, the, one of the benefits here. So the idea is Go to Assist lets you control another computer. The biggest benefit, that we saw, John, and the thing that kind of blew us away was, I went and set things up on my computer, and then I gave John a URL, and John was able to let me control his computer without installing anything. He didn't download a disk image. He went and visited it in his web browser, agreed to a couple of things. Yes, some software was installed. It's a Java thing. So it happens kind of behind the scenes. There was no disk image to download. There was nothing to do. And correct me if I'm wrong, John, because you were on that end of the equation when we last tested it. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't do anything before you initiated the connection.
Right.
With me.
Right. So, you know, if you're an IT consultant, right, this is something that's huge to you. One of the things that's going to kill you is the time spent driving around from client to client. And I know I had that you know, when I moved back up to New England from Texas, I had a bunch of clients down there. Now, Go to Assist wasn't around. I was using something else. But to be able to, and I had to install this on their computers while I was in Texas. And then, you know, I could connect from Connecticut. But the cool thing was, not only did I go from having to, you know, to travel to help somebody, now I could help them from my desk, but I could work on four or five different clients' computers simultaneously sitting at my desk chair, and I'd have four or five windows open. And the reality is, you know, if I'm installing software or working on something, you know, there's progress bars. I always used to say I get paid to, you know, my living is earned watching progress bars when I was doing consulting. Well, four progress bars equals four times the revenue, or three times, right? Because you got to spend the time at least once, but three times as much time with your family, or however you want to do the math, right? So, so you can grow your business, or you can shrink the time it takes to run your business, and Go to Assist Express is part of what's going to do that for you. You can get 30 days free. Go to assist.com/geek is the way to do that. Again, go to assist.com/geek will get you 30 days free. All right, let's see what Aaron has to say here.
Hey guys, this is Aaron from Rochester, New York, calling in with a cool thing found. Huh. On a couple past shows, Dave has talked about using GoodReader on his iPad to download video files from his Mac while he's out of town. A new iOS app called Zumocast allows you to stream video or audio files to your iPad or iPhone from your Mac back at home. It will also allow you to download any of these files to your iOS device directly from your Mac back at home, so you can avoid the VNC Dropbox GoodReader Tango. Best part is it's all free. You can check it out at Zumocast.com. This is where you cut me off.
All right. And cut off you shall be. That's I got to check this out, John. Did you have a chance to play with it?
The tango. I like that.
It's quite the tango.
Kabuki yeah. dance. Yeah. It's
you do it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Not anymore.
No. Huh?
I'm not going to anymore. Not with this. Right.
I almost thought he said Zombo.com, Dave. Have you ever been to Zombo.com?
No, where are we sending our listeners now?
Oh, boy.
It's fine. Okay. Zombo.com. You can do anything on Zombo.com.
This is like Alice's Restaurant? Oh, this is nice, John. This is good. All right. I've got to close that, because otherwise there's going to be a lot of dead air here while I'm hypnotized by Zombo.com.
Pretty much, yeah. And it tells you how great it is to be there. And how you'll always be there.
Zombo.com. That's good. We had to get the reverb up for the day a little bit.
Oh.
Got to air it out. We got a couple, three, five, six things left. I don't know. We talked about Air Display in the last Cool Stuff Found show. And we have two audio comments about it, but I think I've only got the audio for one of them. So we're going to go ahead and play one of them. And then I know what the other one was going to say. So,
hey guys, this is Meg from Crescent City, California. I was just listening to Mac Geek Gab 288, and I was thinking about calling in to let you know about this really great iPad app I just found. But lo and behold, Dave starts talking about it. So the app in question is Air Display, and I have a really cool use for Air Display that I thought I'd share with you. I'm a teacher, but this tip is also applicable to business people who give presentations at work. Anytime you hear the word student, you can just mentally substitute stockholder, and you're good to go. Anyhow, at my school, we have teacher laptops with LCD projectors, but the big new thing is interactive whiteboards. And you guys have probably heard of these, but I don't know if you've gotten the chance to play with them. So basically, you hook your computer up to this LCD projector, but then you shine it. Instead of shining it on a regular old pull-down screen, it's a very fancy wall-mounted kind of solid screen that's touch-sensitive. Yeah. And so what it essentially does is transforms this image into kind of a touch-sensitive second mirrored monitor for your computer. And then you can, you know, control your computer using your finger on the wall.
Promethean board.
It sounds kind of lame, but it is kind of cool.
Yeah.
It makes presentations much more interactive. And anything that you can do on your computer, you can show the students and they can see it, you know, live and big. And you can drive, again, using your finger. The students really enjoy it because they can come up and draw on the screen, too, with their finger or, you know, a fake pen. But it's basically a finger. The problem with these, is first, in order to use it, you have to turn around and face the wall, just like using an old school chalkboard. And turning your back on students or stockholders can probably be dangerous. Also, they run about $2,000, which is pretty spendy. So enter Air Display. Since Air Display causes your iPad to be treated as a wireless external monitor by your computer, you can go to Displays in System Preferences, and under the Arrangement tab, you can toggle Mirror Displays. And at that point, your computer screen is still shining up on this old-fashioned pull-down screen, the cheap kind, but it's also going to show up on your iPad, which is touch-sensitive. So you can launch a graphics application or a presentation app on your Mac, and you can write on the surface of your iPad with a finger or a stylus, and it'll show up on the big screen. This is so much cooler than an interactive whiteboard because you don't have to turn your back on your students to use it. In fact, you can go, it's wireless, so you can go lurk behind potential troublemakers and kind of eyeball their notes as you go and say, so how's that going, Billy Bob? Anyhow, since the image is also displayed on the iPad screen, it's much easier to use than some of the graphic tablets that I've used in the past to deliver wireless notes. Also, you can pass the iPad to a student, and since they can see what they're writing, it's much easier for them to do, and they can do problems on the big screen, which is a big draw. Since it's your computer that's really doing all the work and storing all the data, the cheapest iPad will work fine, which only costs $500, as opposed to that $2,000 interactive whiteboard. Anyhow, I was so excited about this that I had to share it, and I know that if you've got any teachers in your audience, they're going to be interested too. All right, you guys take care. Bye.
Thanks, Meg. And yeah, Dave's comment was along those same lines, that Air Display is touch sensitive in that anything you do with it mimics the use of a mouse or a trackpad on your Mac. So if you're using Air Display to extend your Mac's monitor and you put something on that, you put a window in that display that that you want to interact with, you do not have to use the mouse there. You can reach up and touch it and you know, open windows or close windows or move windows around or whatever it is you want to do. So, yeah, very, very cool stuff. It's actually kind of cool. You can put a calculator up or whatever and you just reach up and touch it. So, it's cool. It, as all this stuff sort of blends together, and especially as 10.7 comes out and we start blurring the lines between, you know, iOS and macOS and differentiating functionality, I think it's going to be pretty interesting. Anything to add here, John, before we move on to some of the more esoteric? Actually, I've got some cool things too, but I think we've got one esoteric left.
Yeah, I got a couple I can toss in at the end.
All right. So Mark wrote in and he said, I accidentally stumbled on this while working with Cinema 4D and Unity Preview, the app built into macOS 10. Can view, rotate, and zoom Collada, these are .dae files, which is the XML-based 3D file format. I can't seem to find many references due to this on some forums, other than common 3D formats I've tried don't work. So he did. He put together a little Mac Geekab experiment kind of thing where we could rotate the logo around and all that in a 3D view. But yeah, it was, you know, interesting, cool little thing. And that's the point. All right. So we've got a couple of these of our own. We've shared all the ones that you have sent in. You know, before we do that, Pete, you want to tell us quick about your tale of woe?
Okay. Well, I'll go into a question, but the first thing I wanted to mention was John was talking about upgrading to 10.6.5, and many of you know I run PGP whole disk encryption. Therefore, I
are you okay, man?
No, I have not upgraded to 10.6.5. And the only reason I probably didn't was I happened to hear Victor Cajillao put out a about a 4-minute show last week and said that you got to watch out for that. Apparently it overwrites a file when you put it in, if you do it while encrypted, and it'll leave you dead in the water. And he fortunately had a backup and then goes in, there's a link to go to PGP and get the proper file and all that, but you still need a second drive to get yourself back up and running.
Right.
My suggestion would be to decrypt, upgrade, re-encrypt. You should be fine with that, would be my guess. Besides, I decrypt about 2 or 3 times a year anyway, just to run routine maintenance and, you know, the FSCK, that kind of stuff, just to keep the drive healthy.
Yep.
So,
Cool. All right. Yeah, thanks.
Wanted to mention that's one of his recent shows.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. So, yeah. Okay. So your tale of woe is not related to that. Your tale of woe is not related to your Stump the Geek.
Yeah. Fortunately, that's not my tale of woe.
Okay. All right. Good. Yeah, well, we'll come back around to the Stump the Geek at the end here. All right. So I found a couple of iOS apps and I'll talk about both of them, but we'll pass it back and forth. So the first one that I found, John, is called App Switch. I don't know if you guys have seen this. But especially on your iPhone 4 or iPhone 3GS or your iPod Touch that can do multiple, the multitasking, App Switch comes up and it tells you what apps are active in the background, which is pretty cool because, you know, you can double tap on your home button to pull up that list of recently used apps. But that doesn't tell you what apps support multitasking and are still loaded in RAM. That stuff is managed by the OS. If the OS says, hey, I need RAM, it's going to go to your apps. And the first thing it tells them is, low memory condition, eject everything that you can and we'll try and keep you alive. And then once your apps do that, it might come back and say, sorry, I still need more RAM. You got to go. And then it just forces your app to quit. And if your app doesn't quit, well, then it really forces it to quit. So the net is you don't know what's running actively on your iPhone. So what's cool is you launch this app and they have a database of all these processes. So they know exactly what they are. And if there's one that it doesn't know, you can actually submit it to them. But you go out and, you find an app that's running and you can tap on it and you can say, oh, yeah, I want to get more info or I want to switch to that app. And when you get info, it tells you, what's there. And also, I'm looking at Twitter. It says, look, that this app was started on November 14th at 10:28 p.m. It has not been ejected yet. I can switch to it. I can switch directly to, because it's a Twitter app, it has a couple of paths in. I can switch directly to my friends view, to my messages view, to my mentions view. Or if I really know what I'm doing, I can go advanced and I can say switch and post a message or switch and go to a status with a certain ID. It's pretty cool. It's also got some kind of general system stuff where you can see, your IP addresses and your MAC address and your UDID and all that. You can see how memory is used. You can see your iPhone's console log, which is pretty darn cool because that's not something that's otherwise easy to find. So, and I believe this one was a freebie. I may have paid for it though. I can't remember, but it's called App Switch and obviously available in the app store. So that's one of my cool things found since the last Cool Stuff Found show. John, you got something else?
I don't know if I mentioned this, but it's in the app vein, Dave. So I'm going to mention it again in case you missed our last show. This is something called App Trap.
Okay.
I don't know if you use this, Dave.
Nope.
So what does App Trap do? A lot of times when you throw an application away, so on the Mac for the most part, when you throw an application away, it's gone. There's a single icon, but there's a lot buried within that. Unfortunately, macOS doesn't do a very good job of getting rid of some of the other files that may be associated, most notably preferences, but there could be application support files. There's various places that we talked about in the past. AppTrap will help you get rid of those. And that when it sees you throwing things away, it'll do a check, and I'm not quite sure how they do their magic, but it usually is on the mark as far as what identifies, and it'll say, whoa, you're throwing something away. You want to get rid of these preferences and other stuff too? I'm like, oh, yeah. Now, it also gives a warning because what happens is that sometimes when you upgrade an application, it may also think because sometimes when you upgrade an app, it throws away the old one. So it'll come up and say, okay, I detected something changed. By the way, if you're upgrading an app, don't agree to throw away the preferences because then that could be bad.
Right.
So I've just found this very useful to kind of make it a no-brainer to keep things clean because I think both you and I, just for the podcast and for other reasons, are going through apps a lot. And sometimes, it's like, this isn't for me and I don't want all the cruft left over. So
yep. Hazel does the same thing. We've talked about Hazel and the thing in the show before. So, yep. Cool. Awesome.
That's all this does. It's its only purpose in life. And
So the next thing that I found, and I've heard of this in the past, in fact, we've had listeners mention it to us, but it's one of those things until you use it, you don't really see the value. Is an app called Vlingo, V-L-I-N-G-O. man, this thing is so cool. And I've used it with both of you here, but you don't know it. Or maybe you don't know it. The idea behind Vlingo is that it's speech recognition. Now, yeah, there's Dragon out there, but this one is so much more streamlined to a workflow. You go in and you say, you start the app up and you could just hold down the screen or tap the screen, whichever you like, and start speaking. And you can just start speaking text and it'll recognize it. And the recognition is really, really good. And it gets even better as you use it, but it's really good to start. But what's cool is instead of just saying, hey, meet me at the store at 10 p.m., I can say, text John Braun, meet me at the store at 10 p.m. And it's going to look in my address book, find your mobile number, create an SMS message that says, meet me at the store at 10 p.m., and then fire it off for me. So really, really handy. I used it with Pete the other day to tell him that we were recording the podcast last week kind of on an off schedule thing. And I was walking between the house and the office and I didn't want to stop to type because I was kind of in a rush. So I just fired up Vlingo and I just talked into it and it was completely flawless. I didn't have to edit at all. It just fired it off. I think I did it with an email last week to you, John. But yeah, this thing's great. Now, it's free for the app, but in addition to email and text, you can also do, you can do searches. So you can do like Google or Bing searches. You can have it dial your phone and you can have it update Twitter and or Facebook. The email and SMS are not included as part of the free purchase. You got to do an in-app purchase for $10 to add those. But I love it. It's almost the only way that I send text messages now.
No need to text and drive anymore.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And I have done it, you know, where I've been driving and thought, oh, I want to send something. And then, oh, wait a minute. I got Vlingo. I tap one button and I'm good to go. So yeah, it's really, really cool. So, and the last one, AppSwitch that I talked about was 99 cents, by the way. So that's mine. I got one more, John. So, do you have one, John? Pete, anybody? Hands in the air?
I got, it's not really, well, it's cool stuff found. If you like paying $99 for MobileMe, by all means, go to Apple. But just wanted to mention to people that there are third parties out there from where you can get them. I recently renewed for a year for $47 on eBay. So
really?
Yeah.
Whoa. Yeah.
So, and I think the family packs were in the low 60s.
Wow.
So there's much better prices to be had out there than the Apple store. Sorry to undercut you Apple guys, but,
And then you get a coupon code with that. And right. Then you just plug
send
it
you
in.
A code, plug it in. It says, hey, you're due to expire on, I think it was December 6th.
Okay.
I want to renew. Okay. Put in your code on December 6th. You'll renew for a year.
Got it. Okay.
Boom, boom. So cool. Simple and easy and more than half off.
Wow. That's huge. That's awesome. Anything, John, before I talk about my last one?
Nope. Why don't you wrap it up?
Okay. So to answer a listener's question, somebody was asking, how do I subscribe to the premium show on the iPhone? And the trick, of course, is that the premium show is not in the iTunes directory because it doesn't work that way. You can subscribe in iTunes on your Mac, but you can't subscribe in iTunes on your phone. Enter Podcaster, the app. And I think this one, you know, again, somebody can look up a price for me, one of you guys. And that would be you, John, because Pete doesn't have a computer. So please. The app is called Podcaster, and you can subscribe in this Podcaster app. The trick is that you have to put your username and password. You can subscribe to any podcast you want, but you have to put in the feed URL. So you can go get the feed URL at the website at MacGeekGab.com. But what you need to do is between the http://, and then the rest of the URL, you have to put your username and password in. So it's http://, /user:password@, and then the rest of the URL. And that totally works. I was able to subscribe. And to be honest, now it's the only app that I use to manage podcasts on my iPhone because they download directly there. I don't have to sync back and forth to my computer. I put my favorite podcast in. I can manage. Look, I want you to keep 3 episodes of this one and only the most recently unlistened to episode of that one. And it'll download again. It's, you know, it's subject to the AT&T limit. So it'll only download 20 megs or less over 3G. The rest has to be done over Wi-Fi. So each episode, like our episode, you could not download over 3G, but you can over Wi-Fi. But it's so much easier to pull stuff down and manage it than having to sync up with iTunes. Because I don't know about you guys, but I never plug my iPhone into iTunes. It's just, you know, maybe once a week, but certainly not more frequently.
Well, I do it all the time because I don't have that. So,
because you don't have podcasts.
That's why I have to have my dang laptop on the road all the time.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So were you able to find the price, John?
Looks like it's $199.
That sounds about right.
If I'm finding the right product here.
Yeah, I think
way
that's
too
right.
Expensive.
Yeah. All right. So let's see. Okay. I'm looking at everything here. Pete has about 6 minutes left, and he has a Stump the Geek question.
Stump the Geeks. So, okay. So I mentioned at the last show that I have a that was on the way. It arrived in the mail while I was gone this weekend. My brand new solid state drive. My new SSD, 256 gigs,
right?
256. Anyway, it arrived and I pulled it out this morning and I used Super Duper and made a clone of my hard drive. It Super Duper reported everything fine, gave me the thumbs up. So I powered down the computer, flipped it over, swapped out the drives, put the new drive in, powered it up, and I've got a gray screen. I don't get a logo. I don't get a chime. I don't get nothing. And that was about 5 minutes before I was time to come over here for the show. So that's
okay.
Why I've got no troubleshooting done whatsoever.
All
what
right.
Did I goober?
So John, the first thing I would do here is I would boot from I'd put the DVD in, the Mac OS X DVD.
Okay.
And try and boot from that.
All right.
You know, because that way, if you can get it to boot, that's a good sign.
And I also have
not the first thing I do.
And I also have the original drive, which I could stick
in
a USB. You know,
because
I have a drive reader, USB.
Right, yeah, right. Okay. So what's the first thing you would try, John?
The first thing I would try, Dave, is I would boot the machine and I would hold down, I think it's the option key,
yep.
Just the startup manager, and see if you see anything.
Right. Now, and I wouldn't expect the new drive to show up as bootable because you haven't put anything.
I
stuff on it.
I cloned.
Right. Since you cloned it, and I did a similar thing, though I use Carbon Copy Cloner, but my expectation is that it should. Now, sometimes the Mac gets confused as to...
Yeah.
Oh, you know,
which, if any, device it should boot from. So it may be, and actually, I think we talked about this in the past, Dave. I think a lot of Macs, maybe not the current ones, but they'll default trying to do in a net boot, and that can take a real long time. So that machine may be so confused, it's like, let me go on the network, which probably isn't present, and see if there's any bootable device. So hold down option, and you should see, I think it is called Startup Manager, or it's a version of Startup Manager, and it'll show you any eligible devices.
Yeah.
As a reality check, and I think you were going in this direction, Pete, is that you probably have a case, an external USB or FireWire case that you could toss the old drive into and just see if it... Yeah, so it,
right.
I would do that. So number one, you know, it should indicate whether it's... I think the icon will tell whether it's the internal drive or an external, you know, with either a USB or a FireWire icon.
Before you shut down, did you go into startup disk and select the SSD as your boot drive?
I did not. No, I just,
No.
So
just,
a PRAM reset would potentially also flush that
out.
But
I'm not even getting a chime, that's what's disconcerting to me.
Yeah.
I'm not getting a chime.
Yeah, that's a bad sign, man.
Yeah. That's telling me like firmware stuff, right?
Well, or that RAM jogged loose.
Yeah.
Anything's
possible. I mean, the machine didn't move in theory, but yeah.
Right. You opened it up plenty moved.
I did no such thing. I'm never willing to admit to that in public.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Just on this show. That's right.
That's right.
I'm
saying that if I had done this is what would have happened.
Right.
I didn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd try. Yeah. Okay. Your thing, John, the option key, that's probably the least invasive thing to test, right? Because there's nothing, you're not doing anything to the computer other than pressing a button. If that doesn't work, try booting from the DVD. If that doesn't work, get the drive out of there. And I wouldn't necessarily even put another drive in.
Try the USB method.
Yeah, but again, boot from the DVD, get disk utility up, and make sure the machine's working, and then start attaching devices via USB and see what comes around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's just a reminder, it's command option PR for the
PRAM.
PRAM reset. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Huh. Not good. You and I both are down. It's not good.
Yeah, got to go get a MacBook Air now.
I guess that's my next step. I'm heading out the door as soon as we finish. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
I have other things.
Me
to
too,
do.
Except I can get my daughter off the bus. If I come home with a MacBook Air and no daughter, my wife won't be happy.
No, you won't be let in the house.
No sense of humor about that stuff.
No, they don't laugh at all when you do that stuff. No.
But honey, look, a new MacBook
Air. But yeah, look, it's shiny, squirrel. There's nothing.
Yeah. Don't. Or even better, I thought you were watching her.
Yeah. Kids? What kids? All right. I think we're done, right?
Mm-hmm.
Are we? We finished? All right, good. You can send stuff in to us. 206-666-GEEK is the phone number to call, and GEEK is...
4335, though I don't think you send things to that number, Dave.
Well,
you could try.
You send your
you send
love.
Your voice.
That's right, you send your
and your love.
Voice.
Yeah, sure.
Feedback at macgeekgab.com is the address to send.
Now you're talking.
All right, good.
I would definitely send to feedback@macgeekgab.com.
No, John, it's feedback@macgeekgab.com.
Now you're splitting hairs.
No, that would be premium@macgeekgab.com. If you're a premium subscriber, you can send in over there. You can check out macgeekgab.com in your web browser for all the show notes that John puts together. And, of course, you can Skype us at macgeekgab as well. Yeah, that's good enough for today.
And if you go to macgeekgab.com, you can also search all the show notes going back to forever. Maybe not quite forever, but...
Yeah, I think it is forever.
But yeah, if you remember something that we talked about and we put in the show notes, you'll find it. And if you want to know when the show notes are coming out or when the shows are coming out, then there's this thing called Twitter, which still seems to be working. Mackie Gab is news about the podcast. I'm John F. Ron. Dave Hamilton is Dave Hamilton. Pilot Pete is Pilot Pete, and Mac Observer is Mac Observer. It couldn't be any easier.
It just gets simpler every day is what happens. I would like to thank Michael Johnston, who is Michael Johnston on Twitter, from the We Have Communicators podcast. He converts this to AAC. Cashfly, CACHEFLY.com, provides all the bandwidth. The podcast marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, Yojimbo and BB Edit from Barebone Software, Disc Label from Smile, and Notebook from Circus Ponies, and of course, GoToAssist.com/geek for 30 days free of GoToAssist Express. All through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. Next show in the normal feed is going to be show number 300, which I think we're going to try and do something next Monday. Pay attention to our Twitter feed. We might do something live. We might have some special guests. I don't know what we're going to do. We have some ideas.
Take the day off.
That's right. Premium version show 299 is coming up on Thursday, assuming the schedule sticks. Between now and then, have fun, but don't get caught. Made up.